Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this afternoon is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. So, Chad, small movie came out starring a strong female lead that has ignited the box office to heights it is previously not known in 2019 because the doldrums of things like, you know, Gretchen and Glass have dragged the box office down terribly, and Lego Movie 2, underperforming, dragged the box office down horribly, and we are running about 18% behind 2018. And now we are not. All because of one woman in one movie. Your thoughts, sir, on Captain Marvel, the 21st entry in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay, so to keep beating on the dead horse of the box office, if we move Captain Marvel from March to February, everything is fine because it balances out more or less with Black Panther and everybody can chill their socks. But what it should go to show you is that if Disney doesn't have a movie in the quadrant, it's going to suck.
Two movies within like 3 weeks of each other.
Yep.
Actually three, because you've got Captain Marvel, Dumbo, and then Endgame.
Yeah, so within the next, 6 weeks, there's three movies. 6-8 weeks, something like, it's more like 8 weeks.
Dumbo tracking at $50 to $60 million itself.
I don't know what they're expecting for that movie.
No, that's what the tracking says, $50 to $60 million.
No, but so to me that sounds fine because it's Dumbo, and I still don't know how I feel about it. I full well know I'm going to go see this movie because 10-year-old. Mm-hmm. I know that, but I just don't know how other people feel about it. Because without her, I'm like, it's still Tim Burton. And he ain't been having any good hits. Even though he's managed to make this elephant really, really cute. And the commercials all make it look, you know, fun to decent. But it's still like, Tim Burton, you've been swinging and whiffing real bad here lately. So I don't know how other people are going to react to it. If it's all cutesy and Tim Burton managed to do cutesy, is like, that's a miracle in itself to me. I would imagine $60 million is going to be good for opening weekend.
Chad, keep in mind we now live in a world in which one of the directors of Movie 43 is an Academy Award winning producer now. So,
who's that?
Mr. Farley.
I figured. I just had to have confirmation.
So, anything is possible.
I'm not harping on the Oscars anymore. Boo. Boo.
Yeah, yes. So, Disney has saved the box office from itself. Lego Movie 2, disappointed. Glass was a strong start, but not strong enough to perpetuate, you know, Black Panther numbers.
Oh, well, no.
We've gotten used to, over the last 2 or 3 years, mega Februaries where you have Kingsman and you have Deadpool and you have Lego Movie, and there really wasn't that thing this year. It was supposed to be Lego Movie and it 2, and it didn't do that. And so you start running behind because pretty much studios treated this January and February corridor the way they used to, which is a dumping ground for things like Greta. And yes, I will continue to harp on the lampoonishness of the movie Greta, which none of you should pay money to go see. And coming from a person who paid money to see Geostorm, who paid money to see Mortal Engines 3 times, is saying something that I am telling you. You do not need to pay money to go see Greta.
That is the most damning thing you could possibly ever say. You pay to see money for everything, and you never say, don't go see it. You just say, I mean, it's bad, but I went to see it. For you to say, don't spend your money on it, that means this thing is terrible.
Lifetime television movie financed by a major studio.
Somebody got fired.
Quite possibly the worst focus features film I've ever seen.
A lot of people got fired then.
Yes, yes. So, Captain Marvel, what are our thoughts, just broadly, generally, before we get into our good, bad, and our not so good?
In general, I think it is, it's a fine to good movie. I think it's more than fine. Like, I wouldn't have a problem going to see this one again. I think the story is simple, and by the nature of it being a prequel, a tad unnecessary in parts. But if you're into the Marvel movies, you will appreciate the extraness of it, because it all kind of, the whole point is to bleed through into everything else. I was putting together my list earlier today of where of the Marvel movies, and it lands, you know, squarely in the middle. But and there's nothing wrong with that. I think when we get into more details, I think the cast is where the best parts of the movie.
I would agree with that. This is not one of the ones that I have rushed out to see three times in a single weekend, as will be the case with Endgame.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, it's not Doctor Strange either, where you just, or Ant-Man or Ant-Man and the Wasp, where you just see it the one time and then you're like, you know, I'll get back around to it when it hits DVD. Like, it's not in that territory, but it's not in the must rewatch on the first weekend territory. I will say the crowd was pretty hot for it when I was in the IMAX screening at 7 o'clock that you've abandoned me for. and it was, the crowd was pretty hot. We didn't get any collectibles, no lanyards, no nothing. I guess that all got saved for the fan event.
Yeah.
But it was a good time. I really like Brie Larson. I really liked her characterization of Captain Marvel, and all the white dudes can just, you know, have it.
I don't understand all these people saying, like, she's miscast. Like, people were saying it before the movie. Okay, fine. You've never seen it. Say it. You don't know if you're right or wrong. But the people saying it after it, I'm like, what? That just tells me you don't like the characterization of Captain Marvel.
I'm sorry, but prior to being Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot was running around in a bathing suit half naked in the Fast and the Furious movies and said, like, 8 lines. Okay? Everybody knew her more for being, like, a former Israeli soldier than being a movie star. Brie Larson has a freaking Academy Award before she even stepped on set to Captain Marvel. The girl can act. And Room is a fantastic film. Heartbreaking film. But a fantastic film. And the idea that she's not... The woman was pulling things with a Jeep with her hips up a mountain. Like, she actually put time and dedication to actually looking the part. Like, you know, we're used to that from our male superhero figures, but not necessarily our female ones. You know, I felt like she filled the role out fine. I feel like she embodied the action very, very good. I think the choreography of the stunts was done to executed well, and it made her look strong. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, no one can pass judgment on the hewing the closeness that it hews to the comic book interpretation, because the comic book interpretation of note has only been around since 2012. So it's not like there's a strong, like, identity pull like there is with Wonder Woman, where if you screw up Wonder Woman, you know, people are going to get, you know, really mad. No one knows what the Guardians was. There was no definitive Guardians team up until that point in time before the movies hit. Same way here. There's the definitive Captain Marvel story was from 2012, and his character's popularity started then. So, like, there's not this, like, reverence for the character. So I love Brie Larson. I love her wit. She brings that fire and that sarcasm to it that is awesome. I can't wait to see her and Downey and Benedict go off of each other, because that's just going to be awesome. I can't wait to see her and Spider-Man interact, because I think that should be interesting. The thing that I took away the most from the film was that I felt like if she'd have had a role the way that T'Challa had a role in Civil War before you moved into Black Panther, I think you could have covered some of this ground there, and it would have made the transition easier, but they boxed themselves in with doing a prequel, and we both remember that Comic-Con where that was announced. I mean, if you do a prequel, then you can't really have her show up in a movie before that, because then you have to, at that moment, explain everything about where she's been, which they still have not explained. So...
They do.
They imply it. They imply it.
Well, they imply it in this movie, but slight spoilers for Endgame, since they did that Disney shareholders thing. They saw footage and they say things. So if you want to scour the internet, you can find out what their reason, what her rationale is for being gone. It's pretty much what you find out at the end of this movie, but you know, also because they did talk about there's a dialogue scene, and I've read what was said, and I read it after I saw this, so I can hear it in her voice and the way that she's portrayed Captain Marvel, and I'm like, I like that, because she's cocky some bitch, and that she only says like 12 words. But in those 12 words, she is overly, I wouldn't say overly confident. She is extremely confident. And if you watch this movie, that's what she is. And I like that. I don't understand why people don't like that. What is wrong with you? Like, in the beginning when she yelled at the Skrull after the Skrull yelled at her, I was like, I'm done. I'm sold. This is it. I like this. Because I don't remember, I don't know any other hero that's done that. And like, I'm just going to primally scream at this person that screamed at me and then whip his ass. That's what happened. If you don't like Captain Marvel, I don't understand what is wrong with you.
All right, so let's move on to our good, our bad, and our not so good. Let's start with our good, Chad. What are the good things about this movie for you?
The good things are the, I will say, the relationships between the characters. Because at the core of this movie, most of it is a buddy cop movie between Captain Marvel and Nick Fury. And if you've seen Nick Fury through all the rest of these movies, the role of Resident Badass is not his in this movie. It is Captain Marvel's, as it should be. And I think that dynamic works pretty well. Also, the makeup / CGI on de-aging Samuel L. Jackson has got to be the best work they've done. Because I could not see any of the stitching behind that. There's like one scene with Coulson in there that I can tell. But Sam's, I could not tell the whole time. With that said, when he had the fight and stuff, you can tell he's a 70-year-old man. Because that running and that getting thrown around wasn't his cup of tea. But
this is your reminder, he's going to be in a Shaft movie.
Yeah, he's going to be in a Shaft as the middle Shaft. Supposed to be the middle-aged Shaft, which would roughly be, you know, about 10 years above me. Him and Richard Roundtree are 6 years apart. Richard Roundtree is almost 80. So there's that. But I liked their relationship, and I liked...
this is also your reminder that Vin Diesel's out there doing Triple X movies still.
That's ridiculous, man. You're a 50-year-old man on a skateboard, and you're not Tony Hawk. Why? Why? Tony Hawk's name is on skateboard stuff. I understand it. You're doing extreme sports stuff. Shut up, man. Why do you do this? I also like the relationship between Carol and Maria and her younger daughter, Monica.
We have two great children of Avengers now. We have Cassie Lang
and we have Monica Rambeau.
Yep. Who both are Witcher in Young Avengers.
No, Monica's not. Because Monica is... In the comics, Monica is the same age as Carol. Monica's actually Captain Marvel before Carol is. Carol's the second person to be Captain Marvel. Monica's the second person to be Captain Marvel. So the thought is that the next movie we get with Captain Marvel, if we're going to jump back to the present day...
We're not. You left so much room... to explore her going back to Hala and going back and fighting the super intelligence and getting a hold of Jude Law's character again. And, you know, there's too much story there to not do another period piece for her second film.
I think you're right. I think we get... I mean, we're probably going to... By the time this movie comes out, this is 2019... The next Captain Marvel movie is
22.
So at that point, if you want to do it, you do go back 20 years, which, let me blow y'all mind, 2000 is going to be 20 years from now by the time Captain Marvel 2 comes out. 2000 is going to be 20 years past that. So you can have a period piece in the 2000s because it's 20 years past. You're welcome for feeling old because that's how that's going to be.
I'm ready for the Y2K jokes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. We could have a lot of those. So I think that's right. I think since Marvel wants to do more cosmic stuff, this is their way to do it. My only question in all of that is, I really think that they would like to have Monica in it. I don't think they want to come back to Earth. But how do you do that with her and Earth and blah, blah, blah? But that's for them to figure out. So I think to not to compare it to another movie franchise, but I think it'll be like Wonder Woman. One period, another period, then you go to present day in the third one. I think that's how Captain Marvel will shake out. So we get to that. So, but all that to say, Maria and Monica in this one, I thought they were really good. I thought they were really good with Carol. They were actually the emotional core of the movie because they're the ones that bring Carol back to. It doesn't seem like she ever remembers everything, but they're the one that pulls her back down to getting to that
point.
Well,
they lecture her about her entire life. I mean, they do a "This Is Your Life" segment with her, so she pretty much is informed about everything that happened before.
So that's kind of what that feeds into what the character of Carol is in the comics, because at one point she doesn't have her memories, and she gets them, like, she's able to remember them, but it's like she didn't live them. She just knows what happened, which kind of feels like a little bit of what they did with this.
Yeah, I mean, in that it was a good way to go, and I enjoyed it. My good is going to be Ben Mendelsohn. I saw director Krennic in Rogue One. I've seen Hannibal. I've seen a whole bunch of things where he's been the bad guy. And Disney and Marvel just turned that completely on its head, much to the dismay and burning of the internet. Tolos is awesome. And Ben Mendelsohn being funny is awesome. And being lighthearted is awesome. And the whole thing is just a delight. And I was pleasantly surprised, and I was very happy to see the depiction of Tolos that he gave. And I'm also happy to see the internet burn to the ground anytime something unexpected happens. So, I mean, that was definitely my good, along with, of course, Brie Larson's depiction of Captain Marvel and her cockiness and her self-assuredness and her bravado or, sarcasm. So,
yeah, he was good, and I'm glad that for the time being, I don't have to hear we're going to Secret Invasion next, because
they just took that off the table for you. Unless they're going to go, like, full heel turn.
See, I think their way out is this is a group of Skrulls.
They're not That's the only what Feige kind of intimated.
Yeah, I mean, they could still do Secret Invasion. They put the Skrulls on the table, but I think Secret Invasion is...
To me, Secret Invasion has never held the punch that it could have because you've done the Hydra thing. And it just is going to feel like a version of the Hydra thing when you do it the second time. Oh, wait, you thought all those people were good who worked for S.H.I.E.L.D.? Oh, wait, Robert Redford was secretly going to kill a whole bunch of people, including, Carol Danvers and Doctor Strange. Never mind that those references don't work in the continuity, but okay.
Strange works.
And so now all of a sudden, S.H.I.E.L.D. is evil and Captain America's having to turn against them and destroy the helicarriers. And then you have a whole television show that was in production at the time who had to change everything they were doing. So I never thought they were going to go down Secret Invasion for the fourth phase, because I didn't think it was too close to the S.H.I.E.L.D. story. I didn't think they wanted to do that. And plus, the other part of it, too, is with the decimation, if you're going to bring people back, why are you going to bring somebody back if you know that they're actually a
Skrull?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they can do a version of it later. I don't want it to be...
Not for a while.
Personally, I don't want it to be as deeply entrenched as some people do. They want it to run, like, through a whole phase, and I don't want that. But, you can make a movie, a Secret Invasion movie that's a thriller, like, in this moment, who can you trust and stuff, but it doesn't need to stretch beyond that.
Dude, like, we're going to get the X-Men and the Fantastic Four sold back to Marvel. That's a whole lot of toys to play with. It's a whole lot of ingenuity. Now, that man has a plan on his wall, and he has a map of where we're going. That map changed.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't think they need Secret Invasion now because they've got so much other richer thematic material to mine going forward. I know fans want to see it. Fans wanted to see a version of Civil War, too. We got that. I mean, Marvel will do things, but I don't think Secret Invasion is one of them. Not right now, in the present Phase 4 conversation, anyway.
Nope. As my mantra has been for, the past, 4 years? 4 or 5 years? Phase Fantastic Four. That's what I want. They need to go ahead and, what's this, the 11th? Need to go ahead and push this sale through, get this over with. So, whatever secret little footage that they have just sitting there, because it's there. I know there's something that's there. Just said somebody was like, wouldn't this be cool? And like, you know what? We got some extra money. Just go ahead and fully flesh that out. See what happens. I know there's something like that sitting in the back corner somewhere. As soon as the sale goes through, lop it on the end game. Give us four end credits. It doesn't matter. This is the culmination. Do all that stuff, and at the end, show Ego's brother, if he so exists, that is also a planet, and let him die by Galactus. And let's all lose our mind. And can't wait to plop down more money for you. That's what you do. Keep him on the hook. Just keep going. But yeah.
I would say that a Marvel movie can't fail, but Josh Trank is probably somewhere saying, hold my beer.
No. Well, I don't think we can ever say an MCU movie cannot fail. But
at this current time,
it's incredibly hard.
At this current time, there are different levels of success within the MCU.
Yes.
There is, you know, Infinity War, Civil War, Black Panther money. Then there's Thor Ragnarok money. You know, there's Guardians, Thor Ragnarok, Homecoming money. And then there's like Doctor Strange, Ant-Man, the Wasp money.
Yeah.
And like Captain Marvel files in that second tier with around Thor Ragnarok, because their opening weekends were about the same. So, I mean...
It's way more. I'm pretty sure it's more than Thor Ragnarok, but keep going.
It was like 156, and I think Ragnarok's was like 153. Thought they were in the neighborhood.
Let me check.
But, I mean, there's varying levels of success. There's no bomb.
No.
Like, the Incredible Hulk, the Norton movie, would probably be the closest thing you could find to a bomb. Was still early on.
It was early on, and they still have not released a movie that has not made money.
Mm-hmm. Which is the definition of a bomb.
Yeah, so they are... 153 for Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. To continue with my good... I really liked, like you said, Nick Fury. I liked that characterization of him. My good was also the music. The music cues really worked for me, especially setting an entire fight scene to a No Doubt song is entirely awesome. And Gwen Stefani has got to be somewhere smiling from ear to ear. I mean, it was the girl empowerment, like, anthem of the 90s. I mean, the only thing they were missing was some Alanis Morissette.
122.
Yeah. Yeah, they're missing some Alanis Morissette. Other than that, I mean, they hit pretty much every musical cue that they needed from the 90s.
There wasn't an Alanis Morissette song in there?
I don't believe so. Hmm. But that was also my good. So, Chad, what's your not so good?
My not so good is... It basically boils down to the conversation we had right after you left the movie, before I saw it. Which is...
Oh, my anger?
Your anger, but it
was... Explain to the people.
No, I'm going to let you explain it. But because it's a prequel, and it's right before... Yeah, and it's right before Endgame, it does what Marvel... It's a building movie, so there's a whole bunch of stuff in there to build on. This time, they went so far into building that even people that have seen all these movies... didn't catch everything and had to go and look and find stuff to figure things out. Which will lead to Brian telling us why he was about to blow a gasket when he left the movie on Thursday.
Chad, Captain America, the First Avenger, was all about what?
The Red Skull trying to take over everything.
By using what?
The Tesseract.
Right. And he touched it, and then he got sucked away to Varamir for years. And then Captain America told Peggy that he loved her, and then he crashed the plane and went into suspended animation. In the meantime, said Cosmic Cube, or Tesseract, dropped into the ocean, where it remained until Howard Stark, floating around, also seen in First Avenger, floating around looking for Cap, stumbled upon it with a submarine that looked very much like something James Cameron would use today, and took it and gave it to S.H.I.E.L.D. Of course, not knowing that S.H.I.E.L.D. was an evil entity powered by Hydra. Now, from there, before Captain Marvel had seen the Tesseract was in the post-credit scene for Thor, in which Nick Fury opens up the briefcase and offers it to Eric Selvig to experiment on for quote-unquote energy purposes. In which time we see Loki in the mirror saying he's very interested in the Tesseract. Again, we don't get the full concept of, and I'm hoping the TV series fleshes this out, what the hell happened to Loki between the time he let go of the Bifrost Bridge to the time we see him in that mirror talking about taking over Selvig and being very interested in the Cosmic Cube? Because at some point he had to meet Thanos, and at some point Thanos had to give away his stone and give him the scepter to go rule Earth with. So, like, that's something I'm hoping that the TV series will flesh out. But at that point, that as far as up until Captain Marvel we knew, S.H.I.E.L.D. was just in possession of the Tesseract. Mm-hmm. Now, according to Captain Marvel's canon, a Kree scientist guy, or in this case, scientist girl, because the scientist guy is also very funny, the scientist woman comes to S.H.I.E.L.D., starts a Project Pegasus, working on a hyperspace engine, a light speed engine, which no one's really sure what it does other than just, like, literally goes into light speed and transfers you to one end of the galaxy to the other. Hello, Star Wars. And they're somehow testing the engine for it. There's a crash. You know, Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, and spoiler alert, if you're listening to this, you should have already known, Jude Law's character shoots and kills, you know, the professor lady, played by Annette Bening, and tries to take the cube. Doesn't succeed because because they had already put the cube on the floating space station. And then shoots the scientist lady and then shoots the engine, and that's what gives Carol her powers. The apparent implication is that the cube set on her lab on loan from S.H.I.E.L.D. for years, without S.H.I.E.L.D.'s knowledge or knowing where the hell it was. Now, you can plausibly say that Nick Fury had no idea what the Cosmic Cube was or the Tesseract was before this point because he's a low-level operative. He's not Director Fury. So he doesn't have access to all the classified files. He doesn't know all the sneaky crap that S.H.I.E.L.D.'s up to. Mm-hmm. But there's still the fact that the cube went missing for, like, Project Pegasus starts in, I think they said 1989.
And no, well, that's when the ship gets shot down and Carol gets taken into the Kree.
So in 89.
In 89, yeah.
So Project Pegasus had been around for at least 4 years before that.
At least.
So you're talking about, like, they get possession of the cube back in 1945 or 1948, and they're in possession of it for about 40 years. And then all of a sudden, you know, they loan it out to somebody in 1980. They just loan it out to a scientist. It's like, I wanna make a light speed engine. Because that's a thing that people do. Meanwhile, I blew a gasket because this looks like, it appears, as though it was a clear contradiction of canon. When in fact, it is not, because she was working at a S.H.I.E.L.D. facility on Earth called Pegasus, which is the facility we see at the beginning of the very first Avengers movie that gets sucked into the hole when the cube is activated.
Yep. Yeah. See, so Brian explained this a whole lot more. He's a lot more calm and level-headed now than when he called me right after the movie, because it was a lot of piss and vinegar and spit and fire over that. And I was just like, I haven't seen it, so I can't tell you, but I know that Marvel is not going to be like, here's this big old plot hole truck, just drive on through, and we're going to keep on trucking and not care about it. But to go to this point, like, I saw it, and when I saw it, I was like, oh, okay. So, because when you told me, I was like, so somehow she got the cube away from S.H.I.E.L.D. without them knowing, did all this stuff, and then they got it back. But then when I watched them, like, oh, she was working for, she was working, at that point, I still hadn't figured out that Pegasus was part of S.H.I.E.L.D., even though they tried to tell us, because when they first get there, Fury has access with only with his thumb, which there was somebody on the internet where it was, that was griping about the fact that it was a plot hole because he used his thumb, and in Winter Soldier he used his eye, forgetting that they're 30 years apart and technology changes, dude. It's not a loophole. It's just, this is '90s. This is what they use. So he had access there, and apparently there's shots through it. Like, there's when they show him driving up, the long shot is supposed to remind you of that long tunnel that Maria Hill drove through. They're trying to give you visual cues. But, again, we've seen Avengers a whole lot. I ain't catch none of those. None of them. So it took me watching it and then going on the internet, and I will credit the guy that said it. I was listening to Slash Film Podcast, and it was Sean Gerber that said, this is the place from Avengers. This is the place you see in Avengers. They did all these things to try to make you see that. And then I thought about it, and I watched Avengers, and I'm like, yeah, he's right. But the fact that we had, this is how we got to this point, that means regulars are like, oh. So I think they went a little too heavy into their world building and having to see the previous movies. They tried. I think it's just because Pegasus is not that pronounced in the beginning of Avengers, that to try to call back to these things, it's not going to make any sense. Like, if you're calling back to like Avengers Tower, yeah, everybody knows that. But Pegasus is like, you see it for the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Which, by the way, rewatching the Spider-Man Homecoming, the Spider-Man Far From Home trailer before this, before they show Captain Marvel, there is a shot of the clock tower that is behind where the Avengers Tower should be, and it is under construction. So just food for thought there. I also
Bax building.
Yeah. I also booed the X-Men Dark Phoenix trailer for you, and had everybody on the row below me turn around and look at me like I was a crazy man, and of course people laughed at me. But you know,
You might have got more play in the when I saw it the second time. Nobody booed it, but everybody was. It was. It hurt so much that how quiet it was. Like, people were excited for the Spider-Man trailer. There was something else in there that got people excited. I'm like, oh, people might actually go see this. I can't remember what it was. Oh, Lion King. Lion King got lots of people excited. But yeah, Dark Phoenix was just like pin drop. So yeah, you know, the quicker that thing comes and gets shot in the head, the better it is for everybody.
So that's your not so good, the world building?
Yes, the way they handled it in this. I appreciate the effort, but yeah.
So my not so good would be that damn cat. I am not pleased with cats.
Hold on.
That have tentacles coming out of their mouths.
See, I think you could just start with, I'm not pleased with cats. This is a little personal. This is a little biased, and I cannot blame you for that right now. I'm on the other end because I have one inhabiting my room, and you know, he's a little asshole, but I like him. So, but yeah, you're having the other experience. So you can continue. I just know that there's another part of this where this is coming from.
The cat's not as cute and not as adorable as everybody is saying that he is. The fact that he has internal galaxies inside of himself, pocket dimensions that he can go inside of, the fact that he can hide a cosmic cube and multiple human beings that he can consume in his pocket galaxies is very disturbing. The fact that he won't do it on command is also very, very disturbing.
But you know why he didn't do it that time?
Well, you know.
It's because it was Toulouse. It was a Skrull. Yes. And he knew it was a Skrull, so he didn't do it.
Very, very classy of the cat to not go after the Skrull.
Yeah, I made a friend with you, so I'm not gonna destroy you. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or condemn you to whatever kind of hell it is in that whatever pocket dimension he puts you in. Because that cannot be good. Cannot.
It's very interesting. Also, where is this damn cat as you go through the Marvel Cinematic
Universe? See, and that is a question, and because of where the cat ends, it became a legitimate question because the cat ends up
in Fury's office.
Yeah, so it was like
hacking up a loogie.
Yeah, so I mean, okay, he could have the regular lifespan of a cat, which means he's dead. Like, he's dead by the time Avengers start. However,
if you have pocket dimensions within you,
I think you kind of have a long life ahead of you.
So it's Carol Danvers, apparently.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe they put it. He went to some other facility. I would hope that's the case, because from the cat is from the comics. He's also from, you know, that 2012 period, in which in the comics his name is Chewie. They changed it because, you know,
80s and Top Gun, which was an inspiration for the film.
But in the comics, the character that identifies him as a Flerken, which is what the cat is Rocket. So now I want to see Rocket with the cat. So I don't care what else happens, the cat cannot die until Rocket shows up. So come up with whatever excuse you have for where the cat's been. I just want to see Rocket look at the cat and be like, no, and do his Rocket things. And then the cat can go away forever. I don't care.
Very interesting. Very interesting indeed. The other not so good, I would say, for me, would probably be the fact that they depict Louisiana as the same sprawling, swampy plantation that everybody else does, and got a huge tax credit to do it, and Brie Larson never set foot on set, I'm sure.
I'm sure it's what...
It was mostly exterior shots. That's all you really needed. It was some plantation up in St. Francisville that you could pay and get some exterior shots with a lake and a gazebo, and you're good to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would hope it's a little bit more than that, as much real estate as the Louisiana credit got at the end of the movie, which I'm not complaining about. I love seeing my home state's name in the bright lights.
We're used to the state of Georgia.
Yeah. But Georgia, I think Georgia's still... No, it's not, because they did it in L.A. But still, the L.A. thing is like on the side this way. There's another one on the side right there. And the biggest day in the middle is Louisiana. I'm like, well, yeah. At least we get that.
Indeed. So what was your out and out bad?
I hate the score. I can't stand the score. I don't like it at all.
See, I'm right there with you, because there was absolutely, like, me and you can say what you want to about Zack Snyder. Me and you can sit blindfolded and we can tell what Wonder Woman's theme is. Mm-hmm. You could blindfold me and play the themes for Doctor Strange and Ant-Man and Spider-Man, and I would not, in Captain Marvel, and I would not be able to distinguish which one was Captain Marvel.
So I can't say that. If you blindfolded me right now, I can tell you, let's see if I can go through this. I know the thing. If you blindfolded me, I can tell you the theme for Iron Man 3, Guardians, both of them.
No, I'm just talking about the hero theme, like their personal themes.
Yeah, because I'm picking these because they have distinctive hero themes. That's why I remember them. Spider-Man does have a distinctive one. Guardians does too. And it's one of the few movies that the theme carries over between movies because they have the same composer. Thor doesn't have one. Captain America and the first one, I can tell you that one. Avengers is the most iconic of all of them. Ant-Man, because that theme carries over too. And we're starting to run out of space. I can kind of tell you Doctor Strange, because I like that one more than most people, so I've heard it a lot. I think I'm done. I think I tapped out. And Black Panther. There's nothing else that sounds like Black Panther and the rest of this. So, out of what, 22 movies, I gave you about 6, 7. That's it. And this one, I can't tell you what it sounds like right now. I just know it was bothering me. Like, I was sitting there, and it just took me out of scene. So I'm listening to it, and I'm like, I get you trying to crescendo here. I get there's a big part of the movie that you crescendo to, but the way you're doing it and the way this music sounds is just stupid, and I don't like none of it. So I hate this score. I'm going to give it another shot because there's one in there that I also didn't like but came around on. But since I can't tell you what it is, it tells you how much I came around on. This one, I just don't like it. I ain't got nothing.
So, Chad, we did the de-aging technology. We learned from Peter Cushing. We learned from Rogue One. We did an excellent job with Mr. Jackson there, fully integrating him into the movie seamlessly, calling into question whether or not you need actors at all anymore. But my bad, unequivocally, my bad, has to be Coulson and the underutilization of Coulson. Coulson has returned to cinemas for the first time since the first Avengers movie, and he is a coffee boy. He is a lackey. He is the lackey of lackeys.
He's in this movie probably about as much as he's in the first Iron Man.
Yes, but in the first Iron Man, like, no, he's in the first Iron Man more.
Probably because he has more to do in the third act, where in this one he just kind of shows up. Like,
he bookends the movie, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, he pops in here and there, and then the third act, he's there for most of the third act. This movie, he pops in there. It's missing the big chunk from the third act, like he has an Iron Man. So, yeah.
I mean, I felt like he was underutilized. I felt like Maya Rambeau was underutilized. I thought that they could have actually put her in a suit and actually done some flight things with her. You know, more flight things with her than what they did. And the other bad for me is, again, I haven't heard the damn director talk. We have a female director. Granted, it's not a solo female director, but we have co-directors, and one of them is female, and she's getting no run. She's getting no play. Nicole Perlman isn't getting any run or play for her screenplay by credit. The other, Anna has a screenplay play by credit as well as a director credit, and I haven't heard a damn thing from her. It's like they purposely lit her in a box somewhere. It's like none of the outlets are running interviews with, like, the directors of Captain Marvel. It's all Brie. Now, all Brie all the time.
Okay. Now, to that, I'll say, in that same Slash Film podcast I listened to...
Well, Empire posted a podcast today of her, of the two of them doing a spoiler cast.
See, when I listened to this, I listened to it right after I saw it, so I listened to it on Friday night. It seems like they did do press, but all of their stuff, like, Peter is the guy that was running Slash Film. He said he did do interviews with the directors, but he couldn't run it until the next week, so it would be this week. So, but I'm with you there. I haven't heard anything about him, but I would always hear...
Even the set visit, it was majority of Brie or Sam Jackson.
I didn't even look at the set visits. For some reason, I just didn't look at them for this. But every time I've heard people say...
And we all know there was no set visit for Endgame because you're not...
You did. Why? Why? Why do I need to send a set visit? You saw Infinity War set visit. There you go. But yeah, every outlet that I've seen, and I've heard them say, when we talked to the directors, they said this. But it's... So I think this week, I would have thought it would have been today, but I haven't really checked, that you get more of that. But yeah, compared to other movies, they have been noticeably absent. But hopefully, you know, this week, it seems like everybody has interviews with them, so we'll get a deluge of interviews from the directors. It might be the same interview from...
This is your reminder, Chad, that there are directors.
Yeah.
And not a solo director. Now, granted, that was her decision because they were partners on every previous project. But still, it is directors, not director. And it should be director. Although, to their credit, the majority of the writing credits go to women. So, you know, so it's interesting to me just the way that they frame that with media discussion and making Brie do all the heavy lifting, which has just been weird to me. Because, you know, they don't ask Downey to do this. Like, Shane Black did an adequate amount of press for Iron Man 3. Like, James Gunn sold the Marvel, the Guardians franchise on his own. Like, you didn't even see Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana or any of them until closer to time for the movie to come out. Like, you had Favreau out there promoting the first two Iron Man movies. Like, the only thing that I can tie this to is our boy, John Watts.
Oh.
You do not hear a lot from John Watts in regards to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Actually, well, I know there was, I saw stuff with him.
There was stuff with, because he was out there complaining to everybody who would listen.
Yeah, I think most of that stuff came, like, after the fact.
I'm glad it came after the fact, because then he took his, what little credibility he had left, and he went and he did Terminator Genesis and pissed it all away.
Yeah. I mean, but he can't be that bad off with Marvel now, because in that 10-year photo, he's up there. There's some of them other ones that are like, I ain't got nothing for y'all. But he went back, so it can't be that bad. But, yeah.
It's your reminder there's a propaganda book coming out.
Of course. The victor gets to write history. They're winning, and you ain't getting no other history than the one they want for right now.
The propaganda book. Propaganda.
They have.
Then Edgar Wright's name will not appear anywhere in the book. Edward Norton's name will not appear anywhere in the book.
They got to lose first. Marvel has to lose first before you can get all this other stuff. Right now, you ain't taking the swing at them now. They rule the roost. Like, all of it. Like, they're...
It's fair to say when you're about to have a $300 million opening weekend.
I mean, you could say they've surpassed Star Wars. Granted, there are more of them, but, I mean...
$17.5 billion.
I mean, both of those were, like, really, really good investments, and this is why Bob Iger is so rich and sitting on top of Mount Mickey Mouse. Last thing on the directors. I hope we see more from them this week.
Well, it should be fairly easy to get them to sign on for a sequel if they, like, unless they want to go back to the indies and...
Yeah, and see, I think the tale of the tape with them will be, I think, like John Watts, you know, they got a kind of indie guy, let him do this, and then he didn't really say much. I think that'll be the mold of them, and then next go around, we should hear more from them. Because then they have the skins on the wall and be like, the way it looks, like, we made y'all $1 billion. Try to shut us up.
And that should be good. So let's talk about those post-credit stings. The first one of which reminded me a lot of Civil War. Well, a lot of Ant-Man.
Yes. Yeah.
The post-credit stinger for Ant-Man is Feige is on record, not with us because he doesn't give question time to us, even though we besieged the man for years. He is on record as stating that they were shooting that scene on set in Atlanta, and that he saw it, and he saw the way that it was framed, and he saw the way that it was shot, and he said, you know what, that would make a good post-credit sting. And so they cut it together, and they put it at the end of Ant-Man. What we saw in the theaters running right now is the first full scene from Avengers Endgame.
Yep.
And it tells us that death tolls are rising. It tells us that Cap still has a beard. And it tells us that a pager has been found.
Well, that's... I mean, in the moment, that scene is... It's because it's the first thing... It's really the first tangible stuff of Endgame we have. So that's what, like, kind of makes it. And it shows our introduction of Captain Marvel to the team.
And Black Widow's hair is still blonde.
It is.
Cap still has a beard.
So that just tells me that this has happened, like, within a day or two of the snap. They've all left. They've all reconvened. They went and found Fury's page, wherever it was, and they all came back to New York.
But how did they know? Because Fury was in a car driving with Maria Hill when the rapture happened.
Yep.
And the plane hit the building, and the pilot left, and the passenger still had to go.
Well, clearly they're in the Avengers compound searching for people that they know and using whatever methods they have. So I'm just going to say Nick Fury left some spy shit on, and they've tracked his spy stuff, and they saw this pager on the ground. It's like, what is this? It must be Fury's. Let's hook it up to some stuff, because if Nick had it, Nick is up to some, you know, stuff that Nick does, and maybe this could help. You know,
that's, I want to know who's on the other end of that line.
Yep, and then she shows up, and it's like, where's Fury? And I like that she said, where's Fury? Because they made it a big point in the movie that nobody calls him anything but Fury.
Which is funny, because if you go back and you watch Captain America the Winter Soldier, every time that Robert Redford's character refers to Nick Fury, it's always Nick.
Yep. He's the only one. Which, you know, that's fine. I tell everybody that everybody just calls me Chad, which is the truth. But every now and then there's somebody that calls me Eric, and there's just nothing I can do about it. I just gotta roll with it. So there's his Eric. But since I've seen that scene, I can't see that scene. When I think about the scene, I don't just think about that scene. I think about what I know from the shareholders meeting, which would seem to be not far after this scene, and it raises a whole bunch of questions.
Well, I guess not if you've just shown up and they have to kind of take you into the room and ask you who the hell you are.
Not that part. It's the part after that, which, you know what? Y'all are on the spoiler podcast. You know what this is. But if you don't know, then shut it off like right now. You'll be fine. But in the scene that comes after is that they showed at the shareholders thing. It's the group of them that we just saw with Captain Marvel discussing options. But in that room is Nebula. So, but there's no mention of Tony anywhere about this scene. But Nebula's there because she tells them that she knows where Thanos went. She says he was, when I grew up and he was torturing me, he always said where he would go after he did the rapture, and he said he would go to the garden. So she knows where it's at. But there's no goddamn Tony. And apparently they all get to, and the conversation is, well, he's there. Why are we gonna go there? What's gonna be different than the last time? And this is where Captain Marvel does the thing that I love. She's like, well, y'all ain't have me last time. Like, that's what I'm talking about, Carol. So now when I think of that scene, I think of all this with it. I was like, well, where the hell is Tony? If Nebula's on Earth, where is Tony? Because the last trailer we saw, Tony's sitting in the damn ship, like about to die. Seems like he's by himself. So, did Nebula and Tony come back together? Why is not? If that's the case, then why is Tony not in this room? It seems like a conversation you want to be in on. And if he's not with Nebula, then why did she just leave him in space? He's only been there once. The one time you saw him up there, why'd you leave him? And you just came back to Earth knowing he got to come back to Earth. Why did that happen? So there's a bunch of questions. My main answer to that is, when Cap and Tony come back together, it has to kind of be a big deal. And I don't think you bring them back together to have a meeting with everybody else. So there's some reason that Tony is not in the compound. I don't know. I'll leave it there. So when I see that scene, I keep playing that in my mind. And now I'm just like, we gotta wait like another 2 weeks before you give me some in-game stuff. And I want in-game stuff like right now. So let's hurry up and get this over with.
And the second post-credits scene?
This would be of the...
of our Tesseract?
Yeah, this would be of the more fun variety.
This is how the Tesseract got back in S.H.I.E.L.D. possession in 1995?
I mean, technically, as long as you had the cat, the Tesseract's in S.H.I.E.L.D. possession. But he decided to cough it up.
Literally.
Yeah, literally cough it up. He's a cat, and, you know, cats have fur balls and whatnot. And that's what it sounded like. If you've ever heard a cat going through the process of coughing up a fur ball, when they start wheezing and then coughing and then wham. And there was Tesseract just slid across his desk, all wet and nasty and stuff. But back on Fury's desk. So, I mean, it's just a fun scene.
And I liked the fact that in the movie, they do start the kind of the, how did he lose his eye? You know, you remember the whole, one of the great things about Saving Private Ryan was the long-running thing about you know, what he had done before his life and the what Miller, Captain Miller's life had been like before he joined the army. Was he a, you know, a madman? Was he a murderer? Was he a, you know, this, that, or the other thing? And they had a pool going as to what he actually was. The same way with Fury's Eye. They start the stories with Coulson, and it just exponentially grows from there. And, of course, you know, the great line, the Winter Soldier, the last time I trusted somebody, I lost an eye.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he apparently trusted the cat.
Apparently his line right before that happens, like, he picks up the cat, he's like, I'm going to trust you. And it, meow. And there goes Fury's Eye. Which, a lot of people feel some type of way about that. A lot of people feel like, you know, Nick should have really lost it in some horrendous battle or whatnot. I'm borderline indifferent, more or less leaning towards I like it because of how they went about it at the end. It starts the legend of Nick Fury's Eye, which feeds into the legend of Nick Fury. So you if the so how he lost his eye is all up to your interpretation. And how you interpret it is how much of a badass you see Nick Fury as. So I'm good with it. Nobody's ever gonna know how he lost his eye except for
people in that cockpit.
And Mendelsohn's reaction to it is, it's not that bad. He's just like, That was great.
Mendelsohn's great.
Yeah,
he's a lot of fun. So Chad, that just leaves us with the Avengers Endgame. Coming April
2019. Got about seven weeks.
Yeah.
7 weeks.
4 weeks till WrestleMania. 3 weeks till Endgame.
Yep. I'm ready, but that means tickets for that should be going on sale in like the next week or so.
It should, which would generally mean you get a ticket announcement trailer, but I don't think you're going to get one, and Jim doesn't either. So, not that they need one, they can just literally tell you tickets are on sale now, and...
Yeah, I think this is like the most culturally aware movie event
that's... Since Force Awakens.
Yeah, it might be a little bit bigger than that. Just because there was such a big gap.
10 years.
Yeah, it was, and all that anticipation. This is like, you saw where this movie left off. You know you want to see this. I don't have to tell you anything because it's just been a year. You need to know something? Go watch the movie again. Get all antsy. And then come on over here and give me all that money. And don't think I'm taking it from you once. No, I need some more. One more time. And a few in the back, I'm going to take from you again. So that's how this is about to clean. They're about to clean up. They do. I mean, I know they're going to do a trailer. They don't really need a trailer.
No.
They don't need anything.
We waited until January to get a trailer, or December to get a trailer. And then we got the Super Bowl spot in February.
That's enough.
Yeah.
I don't know. They've already said they're only giving us footage from the first
30 minutes.
Yeah, 30 minutes. So piece together what you want from 30 minutes, suckers.
So from there, it's a wild ride. That'll about do it for this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
Thank you very much again to Jim Vavida of IGN.com for joining us for our interview. Thank you again also to T-Bob Hebert and Baby Alice for helping to produce that interview and make that happen.
Oh, Alice was there?
Alice was there.
Dang it.
Alice was there in the recording studio. So that'll about do it. Keep up with our podcast. More great content coming as we get into not only Avengers Endgame, not only Shazam, which Jim loved, but we also get into Star Wars Celebration and some hard and fast Star Wars news that I guarantee you that Star Wars trailer is attached to Endgame. So.
Oh, yeah, that just makes sense.
Yeah. All righty. That'll about do it. Thank you very much and have a pleasant evening.
Vengeance.